Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Limited Engagement. I'm your host for the show, Jared Duran. My guests on the show today on this episode, I don't know why I'm talking like that, are Carly Shorman and Dale Rasmussen. And they're kicking off a series of shows that I'll talk about in a minute. But first, the bit that you all tune in for, which is me talking about myself for a few minutes, right? I mean, that's the whole reason anybody listens to this. It's not for the interviews, not for the conversation, not for interest in the person I'm talking to after. It's just about me, right? Anyway, so I guess I am back to being out there again. I don't know, what do you say out there on the scene? I don't know. What do I say about this, if anything? Maybe I don't have to say anything at all. I just leave parts of my life a mystery, except this is pretty much the only place that, I talk things through is on this podcast. Otherwise, it just spins in my head. I guess I talked to Susu about it a little bit, but it seems like, you know, her opinion on everything is pretty much that I should be doing better. I don't know. You gotta. Is this everybody's cat? Does everybody's cat just like sound like they're constantly disapproving of you and your choices when they talk to you? But I don't know. She is the best cat. So where was I? I don't know. I don't even know that it's actually done. It's kind of just hanging out there. I'm at this sort of juncture, I guess. Maybe it's not a juncture. Whatever you want to call it. Where I'm 36, almost 37. I don't want to get married. I also don't want to just like hook up and have some casual thing. There's got to be something in between there, right? I don't want kids. I don't want to live with anybody. And it seems that I'm also, I'm not wild about the idea of dating somebody much younger than I am, just for the headache of having to try to explain all of the pop culture references that I use in my everyday conversation. It's just, I don't know, it's too much. Dating, being in my mid to late 30s and dating somebody in their mid to late 20s is like, there's too much difference going on there. And most of the time, they're just not sure where they are in life yet. And you end up sort of being some kind of stepping stone for them or something, or some avenue through which they're figuring their life out. I don't know, maybe that's a little, because it used to be the other way around. When I was in my mid to late 20s, I was dating women who were in their mid to late 30s. And I feel like maybe that's what I was doing. Who knows? I'm not going to analyze that part of it here. That's more than I can handle today. But people my same relative ballpark age, for the most part, are, it seems, kind of, looking to settle down and have the kids and do the, you know, marriage thing or living together thing. And so is it that unusual? Am I just not meeting the right people? I don't know. I like, you know, I'm a fairly sensitive person. I hide that under layers and layers of sarcasm and acerbic wit, and maintaining a healthy distance and or unhealthy. That could be too. And I like the feeling of being in love. It's one of the best feelings. And when you find that your things kind of, you know, work with their things. And I am a little bit of a romantic. And those are things I like. So it makes it difficult to follow the other impulse, which is to just not invest myself in anything at all and be, I don't know. That would be going the other way and trying to hide any of that stuff or deny any of that part of myself would just be, I think, a step in the wrong direction. This whole thing, this journey into you know, approaching 40 here and having, you know, several things sort of coincide at once and arriving at this place of sort of what I was talking about earlier during the, you know, pre-summer where suddenly everything seemed great was that, you know, being more relaxed and kind of just rolling with things. Not subscribing to fate so much as, you know, the mystery of life and love and how things kind of seem to just happen when they sort of should happen and they last as long as they last. I'm still all on board with all of that. And part of that is unfortunately having, you know, it's like that song. Well, it's like two songs, right? There's that old I fall in love too easily, I fall in love too fast. And then there's the slightly more, you know, more, I think, probably apropos Wilco song, I'm always in love. So I don't know. It's just, and like I said, I don't even know if the person that I was seeing, if that's, it's just like, I think that I have this tendency to feel too much too quickly, and they kind of scared her off a little bit. And I don't know. Is that all asking too much? Is that the whole wanting to have your cake and eat it too thing? Which, first of all, why would you want anything else? Why would you have cake but then not eat it? I've never gotten that. Are you just having cake to have it sit there and look like cake? No, you wanna eat the cake. I think that's a terrible saying, but in the universal lexicon of things, there it is. And, you know, I want to just kind of live my life the way I want to live it. And I would like to share some aspects of that with someone. But I also, you know, I was thinking about that. I was actually writing something briefly about that that incorporated this idea of I am unfortunately best at being alone with somebody else. And I think that might be the problem. So, to this episode, the wonderful folks over at Yab Yum are doing their first sort of fictional serial podcast, which is called Confessions from the Nocturne Nebula. And the concept of this is right up my alley. I love old-time radio shows, and I love science fiction. One of my favorite things ever is the old Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio show, like the original version of it. I love the... It's everything about it. There's just something about this sort of happy place between completely relying on your imagination to come up with an image while reading, and then having the imagery dictated to you by a show or movie or something. And you have these voices and the interaction and the sound effects, and it can all kind of, as you're listening to it, you get to conjure up your own vision of it. And I always love that. I love the shadow, the old stuff like that, the War of the Worlds. I used to eat those things up as a kid. And this is right along in that sort of vein, and I'm very much looking forward to it. Again, it's Confessions from the Nocturne Nebula. It is going to drop in October. And for the rest of the month, I'm going to be talking to the people behind that. You know, so on this episode, it's Dale Rasmussen and Carly Shorman who wrote the script for it, and in the case of Dale, acted in it and directed it as well. And then subsequent shows are going to be talking about the kind of sound production that went into it. There's one where I'm going to talk to a couple of the actors, and then Carly and Mark Anderson are going to be back to talk about the executive production of it and what all went into kind of the nuts and bolts of it and putting it all together and getting it out into the world. So that's going to be the next four shows of that. That's the first time I've kind of devoted that kind of time to a project like that. And it's pretty cool. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to this podcast. I hope you guys will listen to these and get excited about it as well. Again, that's Confessions from the Nocturne Nebula. It's if you go to yabyumwest.com, you can see the trailer. I'll put a link up in it in the show description, so you can just, if you go to the show notes, and the link will be right there, and check that out. And let's get on into this conversation with Carly and Dale.
Say potato.
What's that from?
Gosh, isn't that Saturday Night Live with
Christopher Walken?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Potato.
I thought it reminded me. I don't know. All that stuff blends together. It sounded like a Simpsons thing for a second.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Definitely a Simpsons house. So.
At this point, I figure pretty everything much every joke has been on The Simpsons.
Yeah, probably.
Everything's a Simpsons
reference.
I'm sure,
probably
now.
Twice, at this point, at least.
Mark and I talk about it. We were just talking, we just watched Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Nice.
And we were talking about Streetcar Named Desire. And and he's like, have I seen this, or have I only seen this on The Simpsons?
So. Right, it's like, yeah. The Raven. Have I seen the real version or the Simpsons version? Comes up a lot. Like I think I'm sure I've seen the Simpsons version of The Shining more often than I've seen
the actual Shining.
Yeah. I've seen it a couple of times. It's one I enjoy. Yeah. Well, so you braved the drive all the way over from,
my god, man. Driving in Phoenix. Are we recording right now?
Yeah,
is this happening?
We're always recording. Okay. Yeah.
So I don't mean to be so East Valley. He laughs. The downtowner laughs.
You know what? I have to drive to Mesa for work every day. And I'm like, how do people out here do it? I don't, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I was having coffee with Shane Kennedy, who is a, you know, the Phoenix's original hipster. Mm. Totally lugubrious. And he's like, anything outside of the 7 to 7 is not worth talking about. I'm just like, 7th Street to 7th Ave, that's it. And I was just like, wow.
Well, it, I mean, I don't think I'm quite that way, but it, everything that you need is in there.
I put the me in Mesa. I love it. It's great. Traffic's so much better. Food's great. There's somebody who dances that we see at the bus stop every day on our way to work.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, there's some real moves happening at this bus stop.
I've had to go out to Mesa for a few things. There are parts of Tempe that I like. I don't know. I prefer the bustling city where I love it just as much as I complain about it. Mm-hmm. Which is probably why I always feel most at home when I visit LA.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
It is. But we're not here to talk about my love of the city.
Okay.
We're here to talk about Confessions from the Nocturne Nebula. I can say that.
Yeah.
I'm tripping over.
We can say it really well at this point.
All the time.
We've been saying it a lot.
Well practiced.
Yes.
It's, you know, but do you ever feel like, so I'm always really proud of myself when I come up with clever titles for things or clever names for things. Like the last couple of podcasts I came up with were Album Infinitum, which I have a lot of trouble saying. It always sounds like I'm drunk. Or Apocalyptic Popsicle. That was the other one.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm trying to talk fast, it's just I'll always screw it up at least once or twice.
Yeah, I'm not a very verbal person. I'm very much written word. So there are certain things that we wrote into the script that I still have trouble saying. And thank goodness I was not part of the full cast because I couldn't have said them.
There were definitely a couple of turns of phrase that, on retrospect, maybe we could have made simpler.
Yeah. this whole process, it was a learning process. There was much learning during the course of making Confessions from the Nocturne Nebula. So, yeah.
Now, so, well, let's start with how you guys met. How did you guys...
Oh, my goodness. So, we were both theater kids. And so we met like in middle school.
Oh, wow. So this is a long standing.
Yeah. And, you know, Dale is a very talented writer. And, you know, so when I started thinking about moving fiction into a podcast form, I thought he would be a great person to partner with to kind of develop a script and help bring that to life because he has that background in performance. And, like I said, a very talented writer. So.
And big fan going way back to the old radio dramas, 30s and 40s, and that kind of old time radio aesthetic. Yeah. So,
and we both read a lot of noir.
Maybe too much. Stuff.
Maybe too much.
That's I grew up really enjoying my grandfather would always have cassettes of The Shadow, or I loved and continue to love the original Hitchhiker's Radio play. You know, that whole thing with the, I love that it can be something that you can, you know, when I was a kid anyway, now if I'm listening, I'm usually driving, so I can't do what I did as a kid, which is just kind of close my eyes and sort of absorb it. Because now if I close my eyes and absorb it, I'll crash into something.
Well, we expect you to listen at home to the new series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Because yeah, it can visual. Be listened to, it'll be able to be listened to anywhere.
Yeah.
Indeed.
The magic of podcasts.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. But what, did you guys, had you written anything together prior to this? Had you collaborated with anything before?
No.
And you guys are still friends?
Yeah, it, surprisingly, but it's because we had like a long standing friendship that was like very well established before we embarked upon this. So when it came to like arguing about the script, we realized that our friendship was more important than any single project. It's hard to write with someone. It was definitely a different experience. I'm sure Dale will attest to that. 'Cause
It was fantastic that Carly had that mindset, because that allowed me to say, no, no, that, not the scene has to go this way. The scene, the character doesn't behave this way.
The man is a fan of tropes.
Oh, yes.
So, yes.
Well, I mean, there. When you're working with a genre like that, when you're working with noir, you gotta, they've gotta stick to the, stick to the plan. Yeah.
Gotta paint with the colors in the kit.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But you guys are have a sort of unique science fiction spin to it. Yes, this is the is the idea,
because we wanted it noir, but in the future.
Future noir.
Space noir.
Space noir. Yeah, I'm a huge science fiction nerd. Mm. And so, you know, working with Yabium and doing all these projects, I do a lot of writing. And so in my free time, I love to write science fiction. And so, you know, I'd kind of been toying around with some of these things. And it would just, in figuring out, you know, podcasting, we thought it would be fun to try and move it into a podcast form.
I'm a huge fan of the genre. I love science fiction, always have since I was a kid, but I've never been able to write it. It just never, there's something, I don't know, that's, the idea of like world building and kind of futuristic sort of stuff just never fell out of the pen for me. How did you guys kind of, you know?
I don't know, world building's my favorite part of any and ever.
Yeah.
So I love that. And it was kind of strange. So I had, you know, some kind of tentatively sketched out like this future universe, and had been working on a like a story about an antiques dealer, and then decided that, you know, to kind of maybe. You know, and then when we decided...
Carly's gesticulating wildly.
There's a lot of hand gestures.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing it back to the moment. Yeah. So it was just with working with Dale, we, you know, kind of came to a specific character, put it in this future world, kind of had to work out details as we went. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of going back and forth on, you know, we had a basic structure and then building this world and this very particular story, because it is more about a character than about a place, I would say, this series.
Definitely. As Carly said, she had some really fantastic ideas of what the world and what really more the world, what the universe kind of was. And then from there, that gave us enough space and enough breadth that we were able to kind of say, okay, well, what sort of story do we want to tell? You know, what's the direction we want to go? And kind of ties back to what you were saying about science fiction, about how it's not always the easiest thing to write.
Yeah.
Because it's a trick. You have to find, it's got to be out there enough to be sci-fi, but it's got to be relatable and human enough, or otherwise there's no point in telling your story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And so as we got to start, you know, as we started talking, I remember the first thing that Carly said to me about this, she called me over to her house one day and she said, "What do you know about podcasts?" And I said,
"It was very early that we started this."
I said, "Enough that question is a little bit difficult to answer without some more context." And then from there, we just started going. She started telling me about this universe. She started talking to me about some of the kinds of characters and some of the possibilities that she saw for stories within this universe, and a wide breadth of stories. And it was almost it was an embarrassment of riches, because there was almost too much to choose from. Mm. So we started having to kind of talk about, as she said, what kind of character did we want to focus on to be the introductory story, the gateway for folks to kind of get used to this universe. And that's where we settled on Confessions from the Nocturne Nebula.
Yeah, but I would say that when we started talking about developing this show, we had a built-in performer. You know, I've known Dale as a performer, you know, from when we were younger all the way up to he did comedy. So he has this really great voice. My nephews call him the man with the cowboy voice. That's how they like to refer to him. Like,
which I'm looking into trademarking.
Yeah. So, you know, we knew that we had a performer who could carry off whatever we wrote, that we could at least, you know, if nobody else wanted to be a part of this,
sure,
at least we had a great lead.
Well, and can you do a good Sam Elliott from Lebowski?
Well, keep on, dude. I wish I could remember one of Sam Elliott's lines. I'm suddenly blanking. I can see, you know, I can see him there at the bar at the bowling alley.
I put you on the spot, to be fair.
Sarsaparilla.
There you go. Yeah, that's a good sarsaparilla.
Yeah. Yeah. So it kind of worked out that we built this character, Nolan Stone, you know, together. And a lot of the inspiration for that was that.
It's a great hard-boiled name.
He chose it himself.
He did.
Well done.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was a great project, and thankfully we did have a lot of interest in people wanting to take on roles or participate in the production, and so I'm glad we had a lead, but there was a lot of interest in getting it cast. We were worried for a minute, and it worked out okay.
Did you have any particular writers in mind as you were doing this? Some stuff that you had enjoyed that kind of.
I think when we started, we've done some Sam Spade novels, and there's definitely been some back and forth with Dashiell Hammett and different things over the years. I think when we started this particular project, I gave you a copy of Lawrence Block. Was that it?
Oh, okay.
Lawrence Block, and what I personally bring to it, as I say, was a big fan of all the radio shows. Mm. Specifically, my genre was the detective shows, and for me, it was Raymond Chandler and Gerald Moore as Philip Marlowe was kind of my touchstone. So I think that for me, that was really the that was my North Star. That was what I always kind of wanted to hit, was at least something that felt like it could have come out of
tonally that sort of gotcha.
Yeah.
Very cool. And how did you, so the, it sounds like the idea is a sort of ongoing thing.
Yeah. So like I said, this whole podcast project was a bit of a learning process. Mm-hmm. You know, we started talking about doing the Nocturne before Yab Yum had done any other podcasting.
Okay.
We spent 6 months writing it before we went into production. And during that time, Mark and I were developing other podcasts. Mm. So we launched, you know, we had experience with doing the radio show with Radio Phoenix for so many years, and then turning that into a Mixcloud podcast. That we started releasing other podcasts like Prize Fighting Kangaroo, The Mortician's Daughter, Band Basics, you know, some of the podcasts through the Yab Yum Network, and kind of got a feel for how podcasts work.
Or don't.
While we were writing and then putting this into production and then going through all of that, because it's been a couple of years to get this project fully fleshed out.
I know. I remember it has been a while since you first mentioned it to me. And I mean, so did you begin to go ahead and then absorb more podcasts along the way? Because there's a lot that are terrible too. So also want to like learn what to avoid and all that sort of thing. And
yeah. We did. It was a bit of a challenge, I'll say, in the couple of years that we've been putting this together. Mm-hmm. This style of podcast I've seen more of than I ever had before. Mm-hmm. This sort of performative, more of a fully, you know, fully fleshed out audio drama.
Yeah.
There as we started, there weren't really a lot of examples of that I could go and point to, or at least that I was familiar with. And then once we had kind of decided on doing it, and we had begun to sort of get at least a vague picture of tonally what it would feel like and the colors and the shape of it, well, at that point, then anything that was of that stripe, I wanted to sort of keep away from.
Sure.
From that point on, I wanted to kind of put on a moratorium because
Want it to seep into your own work.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You don't want to get to a point where you're just aping the last thing that you listened to.
Right. Yeah. It's like, okay, did I see the original or did I see the Simpsons version? It goes right back to that. You don't want to be concerned about, okay, is this my idea or did I hear this somewhere? You know?
I am vaguely terrified that someone's going to point out that The Simpsons did an episode with our exact plot in season 17 that I was just never aware of.
Oh, my goodness.
At this point, there's probably more Simpsons that I haven't seen than I have because I stopped watching after a while. I just couldn't anymore. But, yeah, it's very possible. So you mentioned it was like 6 months writing from like outlining to completion or?
Yeah. So we worked over the weekend because in working on this together, we kind of would meet up and then, and you know, we were kind of living in Mark and I were living in sort of an art commune type place. So Dale would come on over with a 2 liter of soda and crash for the weekend. And my husband was very understanding about me spending the whole weekend staying up late, arguing in the backyard, and smoking cigarettes with another man. So it worked out pretty well. But yeah, there was a lot of like arguing and pacing and then writing and then reading and then arguing and then pacing and then writing and then reading. It was a nice cycle. And then the slow consumption of this 2 liter of soda. So I just want to point out that healthy snacks were provided.
Okay.
And we did have a lot of water and other beverages in the house. So if his kidneys failed,
Yabium
does not assume liability for that.
Just make him sign a waiver anytime. Oh,
everybody signs waivers.
Water and nutritions are not part of my personal creative process.
He was like, I ate a vegetable.
Again, Simpsons. It's purple. Purple's a fruit. But yeah, I don't know. It's still just, I mean, the fact that you guys were able to work together and come to, finish a project. I have trouble, you know, just cohabitating with a person, let alone working with them on a creative vision. So
I finish what I fucking start, Jared. There's no stopping. Once it started, once you've signed on, you are finishing it with me. We are finishing it.
And really, honestly, that was a crucial element. I think, you know, Carly's stick-to-itiveness, we wouldn't have gotten here without that. Getting through the writing, because fundamentally, Carly and I have very, very different approaches to process. And I think one of the, you know, if it hadn't been for the fact that because we've known each other for so many years, because we have seen each other's creative output, and we have both seen that the other one is fully capable of producing something spectacular. That allowed us to, when we absolutely did, when we inevitably hit those moments where her process and my process came to loggerheads, we were always able to have faith and trust that if we could just get over this question of process, this particular moment in the cycle, at the end we would end up with something that we could be proud of, and definitely did. So,
and I think a big part of it, you know, we did 6 months of writing, and then I pretty much turned over the script and stepped back.
Oh, really?
Once we had the cast in place, I had my director in place, I had my audio team in place, and I trusted all of them to do what needed to be done to make this thing what we wanted it to be. And so, honestly, for a lot of the, you know, the editing down, the soundscaping, I was not even in that room. That was Dale, Devin, Mark, you know.
That's got to be tough to let go, though.
Is it? I get that. I do. I'm such a writer, though. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, I'm so invested in the writing process. And I feel so strongly about the team that I put together that I think you got to feel strongly going into a project about the people that you're working with. That you can step back and let them run with what they want to do creatively. And yeah, that was important.
Well, this is a very different project for a lot of reasons. From a writing standpoint, it's dialogue heavy. It's a script basically, you know. And so how was adjusting to that writing style from
that was a big part of the impetus for bringing Dale on. Was I've written a lot. I get wordy, and it's like prosaic. It's just not, I had not had a lot of like script, and you have to have like timing, and there's all these things that need to be in place. So he was a great partner to bring on for that, because, you know, he's done performances, he's done dramatic plays, and then he has comedic timing because he's done stand-up. So understanding that kind of pacing was really crucial from moving from the things I usually write to moving to just a straight script where you don't even get to convey physicality of, you know, it's just what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
So there was definitely a process for me. But it was good to have Dale along for that. And then we spent so much time watching old movies and things like that, that I think we just have a snappy way of talking.
Definitely. Definitely. And, you know, there'd be areas where really we, you know, because no one writer can do it all. Right. And so it was a thing where we worked to back each other up a lot of the time. The, you know, our process tying back into it, going back to what Carly was saying a few minutes ago about just that, that, you know, once it's begun, it will be finished. Carly is amazing at output of, you know, of getting dialogue down, getting words down, especially getting excellent character moments and really solid characterization and finding that within scenes and ways to illustrate where these characters all living in the same world kind of have different flavors and different different colors to them. And then, you know, a big part of what I would come in is, as she said, you know, refine down rhythms, some of the rhythms of the dialogues.
Insert meaningful monologue here. That's my favorite note that I ever gave him on a script. I'm too tired. Give this meaning at the beginning. The rest is there. Yeah. There was a lot of back and forth, but.
Well, and did you do one complete draft? Did you have any sort of like read throughs to kind of inform where you were going with it, or?
I think we were constantly reading through it.
Constantly. Just making sure, especially a big part of it is we wanted to make sure that we had at least something approaching consistency of experience to hear it. So we didn't want to have our first episode be an hour and a half in length and give you all the characters and all the exposition, and then have episode number two be 25 minutes,
sure,
all action, right? So, it's as we were going through a constant kind of touchstone, having to read it out loud, having to hear it, because if you're just, you know, staring at the words on the page and processing, very, very difficult to get a sense of. What does this feel like?
Right.
I'm getting anxiety just listening to this, the process described again. Oh, there's so much reading, man. Yeah. By the end of it, Mark could recite most of it. And I'm sure all of you can now too, because you not only had to do that, but clip dialogue. So.
Yeah, I'll be hearing dialogue from this show in my dreams for the rest of my natural life. There's no question about that.
Well, was that like full cast read-throughs, or was that you guys just kind of talking, like reading it out loud back and forth to each other? Or
during the process when we, because we would write and edit at the same time. We would write it, we would edit it, we would write it, we would edit it. And then we would go through and read it and time it and edit it, and then read it again and edit it, and then read it with our sound people and edit it, and then
so
finally.
By the time you're actually getting to casting it and having people like actually in place to record.
You'd think all the typos would be gone.
Well,
they were pretty close to gone.
Yeah. But you guys kind of knew like your episode lengths. You had your kind of serial sort of pattern down and knew what it was going to look like.
We had a rough idea. It's still with the soundscaping, I think there was a lot that we couldn't account for initially. So there is some variance in episode length, especially because they're really long episodes. We wanted to make it like, I don't know. It's like, I was just talking to somebody about how the BBC does these 90-minute episodes, but they'll only do three a season. We did six.
Right. They do very short seasons. It's true.
So it was kind of hefty, you know, when you got into adding all the music and the intros and the outros and the soundscaping and the footsteps. And
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So and going through the writing process was a lot of fun because there's one thing that Carly is not in love with. It's reading out loud in a performative sense. And so because, as she, you know, obviously she said, I had a character that was mine, and that character actually is in the bulk of the show. Mm. When we would go through and do reading, well, that would be my responsibility. And then every single other character was Carly's.
And I should say, all those years we did theater together, I did tech theater. I was building things and painting things.
You were not on stage.
Assembling and props and
creating characters. And
yeah, not so much. I'm always a more of a back end kind of build it, not perform it kind.
There was one notable time that Carly performed on stage and I directed her in a scene, and she'll never forgive me
for
that.
Is that when you made Ari hit me?
It was a performance note.
Yeah, so, yeah, he had another cast member strike me in the face to stop me from laughing on stage because I got so nervous I would laugh. So I was actually struck in the face, but, yeah, so.
Not by me.
He didn't do it himself. Still here.
Yeah.
That would not be classy.
No, somebody else to do it in your capacity as director, though, that's part of the craft.
It's finding authenticity in a scene.
Sure. Sure.
And I'm pleased to report that there was not one cast member struck during the entire recording process of Confessions.
Nobody got hit in the face. That's true. That's true. But, yeah, it was a lively cast. We had a great cast that really was able to bring it to life. So that was something we were grateful for. But, yeah, but writing it, that six-month process was an intense ordeal. And there was a lot of snack food and all. A lot of couch sleeping, and
did you have?
He never took his shoes off.
Just he in would case sleep he with his shoes run? On. Yeah,
just a polite thing to do if you're going to be staying in someone's house.
I don't know if that's true, but we'll let it go.
I've heard it's a host's choice, right? I mean, some people are forced to take their shoes off as they come in. Some people
are never allowed to remove them even sure. when they sleep.
Yeah. Hey. Go to bed with your boots on, right? I mean, did you have a pretty concrete outline before you actually wrote the thing, or did you have just your idea and then write to completion?
We had way more of a concrete outline than I was comfortable with. I am a freewheeling Bob Dylan when it comes to writing. I like writing and then fixing it when you see the problem, and so. We did a lot of outlining. We knew where episodes were going. We had all six episodes kind of planned out beforehand. We're still friends, so that means something happened, and I was forced to acquiesce to his will on this particular point because he is big on the outlining.
And this is where tying back to that sure. difference in approach, I absolutely love what happens when you can sit and write and say, you know what, I've got a character, I've got a scenario. Let me put them in that. Let me mm-hmm. start writing. Let me see what they do. Let me discover. Let's see where they go and what comes from it. My stance on that was, if we're going to be looking at doing a specific number of episodes that run for roughly, you know, the same amount of time. All the episodes are in the neighborhood of an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty adamant from the beginning. I said, we have to know what is the end of every episode? What are we building towards? What is that moment that we're going to leave people wanting more to come back? And
logically, that totally makes sense. Creatively, it was very confining. But we managed to hash it out. That's what's important, that we got it done.
Absolutely.
And we still love each other.
Well, and before I forget about it, because you were nice enough to send a few notes, which is more than work than I ever do for any other interview. What is the saxophone story?
Oh, my gosh. So you might not know this about me, Jared, but I have a tendency to be kind of bossy and demanding. It can be a little abrasive to other people.
Nonsense. Carly is the most delicate flower. Yeah. Head.
Just docile, start to finish. Okay, so here's the deal. We're making this podcast that I mm-hmm. feel very strongly about. It is my first endeavor to put my own fiction into the world. And I'm really excited about the universe. I'm really excited about everything about this. We have an amazing cast. We have an amazing director. Everything about this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And now we need to start working on the music.
Mm.
And my husband, whom I love, is a tremendous musician. He's actually a multitude of talents. But when it came time, I started talking to a different saxophone player to say, hey, do you want to come down and do saxophone, play some saxophone for us so we could record it, part of the music that we're making for mm-hmm. this project? And Mark was like, why would you talk to him about me? Do I play saxophone? And I was like, well, darling, you know, you play saxophone with a punk band sometimes, but you haven't really been like playing the saxophone regularly. We need like something that's like, this project is pristine. Like, we want it to be as good as we can possibly make it. And your saxophone playing might be like more here, and we want to be here. I just raised my hand a few inches in the air. And I actually explained this to the person I love most in the world.
Mm.
And
and you guys are still together.
Yeah. People know me, Jared. They know who I am when they involve themselves with me, because I'm not a secret. So.
And Mark is a saint.
Yeah, it's worth he really
underlining
is. Yeah, he's the best. He's the best saint. Person in the world. So, he secretly recorded some music with our sound engineer, because the sound engineer was like, why don't you just come in here and lay down some saxophone? And they didn't tell us they were doing it. They just pulled us in there and said, we'd like you to hear the intro. We kind of laid some music to it just to give you an idea of what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the most beautiful things I ever heard. We both were just kind of stunted into silence for a moment. We had all these expectations. We were like, we want it to sound like you're in a dark alley and it's in the future. And then you hear like a saxophone coming down that alleyway in the future.
From somewhere in a second floor balcony, someone's got their door open and they're playing in the dark in their undershirt, just wailing away their own agony and pain. And you just hear that. You just happen to catch the strain of it coming down, and you know, we're laying this out, and then
we got very specific.
Yes,
writerly specific.
Mm-hmm. and then they hit play, and I, you know, it's a thing where we probably both would have cried, but we had goosebumps in our eyes holding it back. So
it was the first time we heard it all put together, and we were just like, oh my gosh. And then we get to the end, and I said, oh my gosh, who did the saxophone? And Devin's like, Mark. And Dale just looks at me and goes, Mark's not gonna say it, so I'll say it. Fuck you.
Mark's my boy. I gotta stand for him.
So when you hear the saxophone in this, that is Mark. He's doing a fabulous job there. And he really gets that second story, you know, undershirt agony thing. He really nailed it.
That's pretty.
But I knew he wouldn't tell you the story when he's in here talking about making the music.
I'm going to ask him about it, because it's kind of his hold my beer moment.
Oh, he has a lot of those, to be quite honest. Our whole life is a series of him saying, watch this.
I would absolutely describe the pairing as, going back to what we said earlier, Carly is the person that says, we are going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark's the person who, against any expectation or any odds, always seems to figure out the way of going about doing it.
That's a good pairing, then.
Yeah, we describe it as the magic that makes us real. So we do a lot of things together. But that is an accurate description, is that I think of something and then Mark figures out how to make it happen for me. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So as the writers of this, and as a writer, I always hate being asked for the elevator pitch. As a publisher, I hate being asked for the elevator pitch. But okay, so you know, in this essentially what is the month of shows devoted to Confessions of the Nocturne Nebula, What is the plot of this? What is the story? What are we following from episode to episode?
So what you're going to be following is you're going to be following the story of a bar and nightclub owner 700 years in the future in a place that is hundreds of thousands of light years away from an Earth that has been lost to humanity, and living in a city that a city in space.
Space station,
but a city. That feels, if not even contemporary, feels like the throwback to those old radio shows, you okay. know, the bygone.
There's
days.
A retro futurism to it because, you know, there's this lost Earth, and so there's this nostalgia for this missing place. Mm. So they bring back a lot of what you would think of like an old Earth aesthetic in the things that they do and like, and
sure. Yeah, exactly. And in that way, one thing I'm proud of is that I feel it's going to be counter to a lot of what people expect when they hear science fiction, right? Because they're expecting technology wild and fantastical and so far beyond anything where we're at now. And mm-hmm. what we've essentially said is that we have a humanity that's gone into space and rejected a lot of that fetishization of technology. Okay. And so it is, you know, while it's unquestionably of the future and mm-hmm. it's unquestionably of space, and, you know, we've conquered faster than light travel, you wouldn't necessarily guess that by the way people carry themselves. And so you've got this nightclub owner who is living the high life, right? And at the same time, because it's noir, mm-hmm. right? If he just got up, slung drinks, went to bed, there'd be no story. So in addition, he walks a shadier side of the line. And our story is what happens when the carefully constructed public facade that he presents runs headlong up against some of his more under-the-table activities, and how he, from that point, has to navigate circumstances. And right from the very beginning, and we ultimately, as we walked through, we got further away from this, but our first touchstone was, let's do Casablanca without the love story. And then so from there, it just kind of began to grow and take shape. And so, yeah, you'll see essentially the devolution and degradation of what had been a fairly successful person's life.
Yeah, we read a lot of Shakespeare growing up. There's a lot of Shakespeare in our teenage years, way more than popularity would permit. But
way more than probably should have been.
Yeah, so...
Well, that's, you know, I'm starting to think aesthetically, you know, a little bit Blade Runner, and then like you know, Rick from Casablanca before and after Ingrid Bergman shows up. You know,
we're very comfortable with those illusions. I would say.
Absolutely, absolutely. And anyone else hearing this, you should also maybe picture the same things.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this. There's a writer, Richard Codrey. Have you read him at all?
I've heard the name. I haven't read him.
So his series that really caught on is called Sandman Slim. It's about a character. It revolves around this guy, Sandman Slim. And it is kind of horror meets noir kind of thing. And, he's meets like Tom Waits, you know, and it's like this very Chainsmokey
awesome.
Kind of guy. Yeah, it's fantastic. I highly recommend it. But I love that kind of thing that brings a sort of, you know, darkness to, you know, has that noir to it, but has a different kind of spin on it as well. And it sounds like sounds like that's what you guys are working up. So how was it to like hear some of this realized, especially once you got to the sound effects and stuff like that, like the actual radiophonic stuff?
So
I'm sure
we both had very different experiences here because, for like I said, Dale was part of the production process. He was the director, you know, for the actors. That means he put the dialogue together. And when it came to soundscaping, he worked hand in hand with our sound designer. So they're sitting in a room, they're going through it. So he's probably heard each segment 9,000 times. So we'll have him express what that was like in just a moment. For me, it was glorious because, like I said, I took a step back. I heard the early cuts, made sure they were in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I felt comfortable with what was happening. Heard those first couple of episodes, stopped listening entirely, waited until it was all done, and then listened to them all together. And I was just... It gave me enough space from the project to be able to feel like somebody coming in and listening to it for the first time. And so I had a really great experience of like hearing it all done and hearing it all put together. Now you tell me your story.
So I had no space from the project for about a year and a half. You know, from it really was kind of a madcap process from the first decision to do the project, then to story meetings, then immediately into writing. From you know, from the night we said, okay, the final episode is finished, it is done, and we did victory laps around Carly's commune, we were in auditions less than 2 weeks from
there. I'm a fast mover.
And from auditions being done, we were in the recording studio weekly within a week from there. Once that was done, immediately diving into you know, going through and listening to takes and selecting takes and assembling that and putting together kind of that base, and then moving into, as she says, you know, adding music, adding soundscape, adding sound effects. So yeah, I was very, very actively involved through all of that. And as
do you still enjoy listening to it though?
I do. I enjoy very much being able to listen to it, have some sort of cohesive flow as opposed to listening to the same line of dialogue, the same 5-6 second, you know, clip repeatedly for an hour and a half, but going and sometimes one thing Carly's great at is decisiveness, you know, as she's able to say, you know what, I like this, I don't like this. Sometimes I struggled with that. So when I would get in, and it was really fantastic, maybe fast forwarded a little bit through it. But when we were in the recording phase of it, when we had brought in actors, it was moving. It was humbling. It was really powerful to hear talented performers take these characters and these lines and these scenes that Carly and I had put together and gone over and gone over and gone over and felt like, okay, well, we know them now, right? You know, I can recite them backwards and forwards. So what else is there to find? Mm-hmm. And then when we had these amazingly talented voices, projecting that and finding their own characters and finding their own ideas on, you know what, maybe I'm not going to say this line the way you guys have always said it while you're writing it. I have this way that I'm going to say it different, and you hear it and you go, oh God, that's so good. Like, it's better. So being able to hear that was really illustrative. And then as it began to finally kind of coalesce and take shape, and especially once the music that Mark and Devin provided began to hold that all together, you know, obviously everyone knows how important, or they should, everyone know, you know, how much score impacts what you know, what when you're perceiving, you know, a fictional story.
It can put you in it or take you out of it.
And Devin's so remarkably talented as a musician and as a cinematic musician.
Yeah. What he was able to do and what he was able to find and what he was able to assemble. You know, we would come to Devin with some weird things. We'd be like, okay, here's the thing. It's got to be super jazzy. in a classical sort of style, but it also has to sound like it's from 700 years from now, and it's got to be unlike anything you've ever heard before. Go, do both.
Retrofuturism.
And so when we got to the point that you started to hear these fully realized characters matched by this music that really just does kind of touch something within you. Satisfaction is prosaic. It was stunning. It was moving. It's some of the greatest profound joy I've ever had. And most of the time balanced out all the pain and headaches along the way.
I've done worse to you.
Yes, she has.
Yeah. I think, and this is funny because I know that you'll understand this, especially because we've kind of talked about this before, but as soon as I'm done with writing something, I just feel done. Like I think about, you know, and I don't ever want to hear it or touch it or see it or think about it again. And so it was really great that they were able to, you know, bring this production to life in the way that they did. This holy trinity behind me, and you know, really was able to flesh it out, because I have a real stopgap when it comes to like, okay, I wrote it, now it's out of my hands.
Well, I mean, and I guess, I mean, how that was one of the things I was wondering at, you know, you took 6 months to write it, and then it's now years before it's seen.
So first of all, the production took a long time. Mm-hmm. It did. We had to, you know, you're talking mixing, mastering, cutting down the dialogue, you know, adding the music, which was original, you know, a lot of original music. You know, it did take a long time, but we also were beset by unexpected challenges. And so, you know, our sound designer had a health issue that kind of sidelined him for a while, and we didn't want to move forward without him. So we waited for a stretch until he was able to like come back to us. And we just had a bunch of different things. We had a bunch of problems with the website at Yabyum getting where we had to move servers. It's like our third server move this year, but I think we're golden now. So there's been a lot of unexpected challenges while we were going through the production and getting everything finalized. Mm-hmm. And it's just doing something of this scale. Like I said, six episodes that basically run between an hour and a half each. It was quite an undertaking, much more in scope than we initially thought. Mm-hmm. And then to actually see it through is like, okay, we're really doing this. We're going to really do this.
Staggering just solidification or establishment of that concept of sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
right,
yeah.
Going in and as Carly was saying, you know, and we had to go through all these things, and also, you know, I had never touched audio editing software before. So in addition to,
I think that picture in Phoenix Magazine is actually you like first learning how to do the clip so that you could take it home and edit it all.
Yep. Yeah. exactly. That's, you know, the movie magic, right? Here's the absolute neophyte, but we're gonna present him as skilled and talented.
Well, you're
and
skilled and
capable.
Talented. I mean, that was the beginning of. I mean, you took the Group W bench home, which is the computer that we record on, and you know, and spliced it all out and went through all those audio files. You know, you weren't calling for tutorials. You just needed that. You kind of just picked it up by watching Mark and then said, I could sit in this chair now.
So. Yeah, it's one of those things. There's nothing else to do but dive in. And as I told Carly, once it was finished, it was about a month and a half or 2 months before I was no longer editing my dreams. And I want to be clear, I wasn't editing in my dreams. I wasn't dreaming about editing. I would have a dream, and about 5 seconds of that dream would play, and then it would play again, and then it would play again, then it would finally join another section that I had dreamed through 6 or 7 times previously. And so, yeah, that process, it broke me.
I like to think of it as failing your way to success, right? I had no idea about any of this stuff before I started, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it is. And then, you know, it becomes sort of second nature, I guess, after a while. But yeah, initially it's the, okay, I don't know how any of this shit works. Let's just do it.
Right. The terrifying part was when I realized I missed it.
Oh.
When after, you know, the audio was done and I would be sitting at home and I would be getting antsy and fidgety. I'm like, I feel like I should be doing something. I feel like I'm not being productive. I have nothing to do. And I'd be like, oh, I have nothing to do.
That's actually, I think of, you know, as somebody who's always doing something, the moments of trying to figure out how to relax, like, can be very stressful.
Yeah.
I think once one of us, either of us, has any ideas on that front, we'll probably come and present them to the other.
I do not relax well.
I've finally started to. It just it hit like a fuck it level. Like I was gonna burn out if I didn't just take a breath. And that's had to be done.
I don't know. I think that's great. It's good for your like mental, physical, all those well beings.
You just have to be careful. There's the danger, the real danger of enjoying that too much and being like, oh, I don't want to go back to any of it anymore.
Right. But the thing is like when I'm relaxing, when I'm like, okay, I have a whole weekend to do whatever I want, mm-hmm. I'm writing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's worth noting that when Carly has put in a full day of, you know, reading through articles, you know, provided by her writers and writing her own articles and writing through on reviews, when Carly has finished her 8, 10, 12 hours of reading and writing, her decompression is to read and write. Which I don't get, but apparently it works.
No, it's fantastic. I should try that sometimes instead of drinking. But
hey, Jared, we all have to have our hobbies.
Indeed. So speaking of the Yabium site, yabiumwest.com, you can hear the trailer right now.
Trailer's up, and we are going to have hopefully a teaser going up in September. And then the episodes start airing first week of October.
Fantastic.
And then we're having a big party at Rips on the 26th.
Nice.
Retro Futurist Dance Party. We're ready for it. Are you going to come and dance with us, Jared? You can come and drink with us.
That I can do. Yeah. Usually one leads to the other.
Great. That's perfect. Sounds great.
Sounds fantastic. Well,
so dancing leads to drinking?
No, it's always the one order. There's only a one-way order on that. Yeah.
You come on down. We'll buy you a drink.
All right. Sounds delightful. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys both for talking to me about this. I'm excited about it. So.
We're very excited. We can't wait to share.
Thrilled. Awesome. Absolutely thrilled. Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you. All right, that's it. That's the show. Thanks, as always, for listening. I didn't do any of the business up at the top, so if you are still listening, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, you know, rate and review wherever you listen, Spotify, Stitcher, all that sort of stuff. And subscribing to the feed is huge for me. So it helps between the subscriptions and the ratings. It helps put it out there as a suggestion to people. And if you want to be a guest on the show, or you want to write some feedback or anything like that, if you want to give me relationship advice, whatever, it's ltd.engagement@gmail.com. And on Twitter at ltd_engagement, on Instagram, ltd_engagement, all that kind of thing. You can follow that stuff. And, you know, basically my Twitter feed is bite-sized versions of my intros here. So if that is entertaining to you at all, you can get that there. And that's going to do it. Thanks again to my guests, Carly Shorman and Dale Rasmussen. And you can go to the Yabium website and check out that that trailer for the show. And again, that drops in October. And then the next episode is going to be talking to Mark Anderson about the sound production that'll drop next week. So you can look forward to that. And see you on down the road. This has been a Hoon Waddle production. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not check out one of our other fine podcasts available from hootandwaddle.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any number of podcast apps. If you'd like to support Hoot and Waddle and get access to an exclusive member-only podcast, receive discounts on merch, and more, go to patreon.com/hootandwaddle.